Good evening, folks, and welcome back on this Saturday, the 16th day of April, 2022. I'm your host, Mark Holland. Quite a week it's been. There were a lot of stories that in any other week might have been the top story for the week. Whether we're talking biggest blockbuster or biggest lie, I'll save what's possibly the biggest one in that category for the second segment tonight. There were a lot of stories that in any other week might have been the top story for the week. Whether we're talking biggest blockbuster or biggest lie, I'm sure you can guess who read it off the teleprompter. So I guess the real challenge this week in putting this show together is trying to cut through all the smoke and other intentional distractions to try to make some sense of the insanity. And maybe we're even getting used to the insanity by now, but not how shameless Big Brother and his ministers of propaganda are about pushing it. So buckle up. Here we go. We'll lead off with Fall of the Money. And this first story has the advantage, too, that it's the most straightforward. Breaking news. This is all over the place. I'm looking at the headline from the Daily Mail. Inflation in the United States leaps to a 41-year high of 8.5% just hours after official spokeslayer for the Biden regime, Jen Psaki, sought to put blame, where else, on Vladimir Putin and the invasion of Ukraine. Even though the Daily Mail does point out, oh yeah, inflation was heading for the stratosphere long before they managed to poke the bear into taking that bait. The Labor Department said Tuesday that the Consumer Price Index increased 1.2%. That's just in 1 month, in March, from the month before. And that's an 8.5% annualized gain from a year ago. And that's the largest annual gain since December 1981. And, of course, it even excludes food and energy. If you put those in there, the real number would be one heck of a lot higher, as everybody living actually knows. Meanwhile, the price of basic necessities, exactly as intended, your host will say again, is up sharply. Groceries at least 10% higher than a year ago, shelter costs up 5%, clothing almost 7%, and energy up almost a full third, 32%, well, at least this week. And these numbers make it clear one more time, as if we needed it, that inflation is just getting rolling. Zero Hedge's summary is actually a bit more matter of fact. The headline says stocks, bonds, and gold have all surged after the CPI numbers came out, and here's the kicker, folks, they're not as bad as they could have been. Some would say should have been if they were reported honestly. By the way, on that front, John Williams and Shadowstat's latest numbers report that the real inflation number is a lot closer to 17%. That's their 1980-based SGS alternate CPI. And in spite of that, says the story, rate hike expectations have eased up modestly for the whole year, although the market is still pricing in a 97% probability of a 0.5%, 50 basis point hike in May. And as the Zero Hedge story concludes, you got to wonder how long these knee-jerk moves are going to last. In related stories, West Texas Intermediate crude has soared up 6%, again above $100 a barrel. There's a whole lot of tension in Shanghai where people are literally screaming about being starved to death during the major, incredible, unbelievable, but certainly communist to the core and probably coming soon to American shores, lockdowns there. There are videos all over the web of moon suit wearing police and masked military terrorizing the citizenry. And as a result, a cargo backlog, what? You thought that was over already? Is rippling beyond Shanghai, and the lockdown is stopping trucks and container ships to boot. And by now you know that means yet another inflation hit a little ways down the line. And while we're on the subject, kind of, here's one more related story on the international finance front. An undisclosed investor says Hal Turner's radio show is selling shares in Deutsche Bank and Commerzbank. Remember, other analysts have said for quite a while that Deutsche Bank is probably the first of the major dominoes to completely implode. And this was according to a stock monitor late Monday, indicating that the stakes amounted to more than 5% of Germany's top two lenders, 116 million shares in the case of Deutsche Bank. Obviously, it could be related to sanctions, to the shutdown of much of Germany due to the natural gas shutoff from Russia and so forth. And anyway, you slice it, folks, it sounds like a harbinger of things to come. Here's one more from the How Evil Are We Really front. And it goes to show you how the regime will tell you that they're trying to help you out, all the while stabbing you in the back and twisting the knife. In his latest attempts, says Zero Hedge's summary, to ease, yeah, sure, the relentless pain at the pump, the Biden Fuhrer has pulled off something, well, either disgusting or remarkable. He's managed to infuriate climate activists and the oil and gas industry at the same time. All the while, they say, jacking up demand for America's most vital agricultural commodity, corn. Now, if you've been following the ethanol debacle, folks, for years, you know that about the only good thing that you should do with GMO'd corn is burn it up anyway. The nasty economic secret is that it really doesn't release as much energy when you finally burn it as it actually took to produce it, all things considered. And, of course, it has all kinds of other problems in gasoline, from absorbing water to dissolving certain plastics and rubbers. Ultimately, it's not doing any good to the cars that burn it. But remember, they want them all off the road eventually anyway. So what has the regime done? They've announced, while the Biden puppet was having his strings pulled around an ethanol plant in a remote Iowa town, he said that the EPA will eliminate restrictions on higher than regular ethanol content gasoline during the summer months. It's not bad enough that 10% of fuel is already laced with this stuff. They're going to allow it to go up to 15%. And at least for the time being, it's being subsidized, so it'll make things appear better, even though ultimately it's going to cause worse problems than it ever attempts to solve. And as even the lousiest economists are able to see, since corn prices have been rising right alongside oil, and fertilizer is rapidly becoming unobtainium, whether this will actually have any impact, even temporarily, on the price of gasoline remains to be seen. What it will do, though, is exacerbate the food problems, and that, your host suggests, is the bigger intent anyway. And here are some of the funny details. One top energy lobbyist expressed his concerns to the Wall Street Journal, saying, "We're concerned that the administration, sick, is not focused on the real structural problems here, gee, do you think? And it's attempting to find short-term fixes that don't get at the heart of the issue. Environmentalists, though, have opposed past attempts to raise the summertime cap on ethanol content because, oh, guess what? It creates additional smog. Meanwhile, though, everybody knows you can expect to pay more for a bag of Doritos, corn-fed beef, and most other food that Americans that don't know any better, your host notes here, consume. Guess they'll have to find another way to get their daily allowance for GMOs and glyphosates. I guess you might observe that if the mask mandates and vax mandates are intended to kill lots of people, these ethanol mandates will help kill off their cars. And there's this, too. Because of rising fertilizer costs, no Zero Hedge, American farmers are already planting more soybeans, less corn, all of which is likely to create even a greater and more serious supply-demand imbalance.
Are you crazy? Or just plain stupid?
Stupid is stupid does, Mrs. Blue.
I guess.
And oh yeah, speaking of stupid, let's dispense with this story or two next. On Monday's news, I talked at length about the Biden viewer's anti-constitutional rant. Oh, yes, we need to have some kind of a victory, even if it's against the Constitution and the American people. He delivered a bunch of idiotic, traitorous, and outright lies on gun violence from the Rose Garden Monday. My personal favorite was how he left the podium, managed to dawdle his way over to a table where there was a ghost gun kit set up, whereupon he pointed to it and said, "See, it's so easy to build, even a senile incompetent might be able to put it together." No, hardly. But if he was looking to sell ghost gun kits, he probably came a lot closer to getting a few people to sign on for that than to sign on for his anti-constitutional disarm the peons agenda. But it was this clip, as you might suspect, that really got under my skin. Listen carefully. He repeats the lie that the firearms industry is exempt from liability, all the while ignoring the real elephant in the room.
We're the only outfit in the country that is immune. Imagine had the tobacco industry been immune to prostitute being sued. Come on.
Come on yourself, you lying sack of manure. He knows darn well the only industry that's really immune from being sued in this country is the one that he's forcing people to take their poison injections, including the U.S. military. This isn't merely lying. This is mass murder and treason by falsehood. And that's a great segue because, as I said up front, we'll be working our way up the lying ladder today. First case in point, courtesy of Dr. Ron Paul, former congressman and presidential candidate from Texas. Under the Lou Rockwell headline, the CIA has admitted now that they're feeding Americans false info about, in this case, Ukraine. Last year, he begins a Gallup poll showed that Americans' trust in the mainstream media had fallen to its second lowest level on record, and only 7% of Americans, the most dumbed down, responded that they have a great deal of trust in the media. That loss of trust, says Dr. Paul, has been well earned, and it explains the massive growth of independent media and alternative voices on even socialist media before they get banned. The response to the rise of independent media voices, though, has been a rush to cancel any voice that the mainstream media and their oh-so-PC puppet masters don't want people to hear. Citizens of the Soviet Union, he noted, would read manipulated media like Pravda, not because the regime reported facts, but because, if you got used to it, the truth could be found hidden between the lines of what was reported and what was deliberately not reported, which seems to be exactly where we are in the U.S. today. And last week, he said, an extraordinary article appeared in, of all places, NBC News, sick, reporting that the U.S. intelligence community, and I got to put sick in there too now, don't I, is knowingly feeding information to the public that it does not believe accurate for American audiences to consume, courtesy of the mainstream media. In other words, the article reported that the U.S. deep state admits to being actively engaged in lying to the American people in the hopes that they can manipulate public opinion via propaganda. And according to the NBC News article, quote, multiple U.S. officials acknowledge that the U.S. has used information as a weapon, even when confidence in the accuracy of the information wasn't particularly high. Sometimes it has used low-confidence intelligence for the deterrence effect. Readers, says Dr. Paul, might recall the shocking headlines that Russia was preparing to use chemical weapons in Ukraine, that China would be providing military equipment to Russia, that Russian President Putin was being fed misinformation by his own advisors, and more. All of these, as it turns out, were churned out by the CIA to be repeated in the American media, even though they were known to be false. All, as one intelligence official quoted in the article said, quote, trying to get inside Putin's head. The real intent, he suggests, seems to be getting inside America's head with fake information meant to shape public perception of the conflict and convince people that the Biden Fuhrer is, leading you to greater glory, all on behalf of the fatherland, our homeland. Concludes Dr. Paul, those pushing Russia, 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 and the Russiagate hoax throughout the Trump administration years claim that the goal of the Russian disinfo was to undermine America's trust in our own government, media, and other institutions. So isn't it ironic, he says, that the CIA itself has done more than the Russians ever could have to undermine Americans' faith in the media by feeding fake stories to establish their particular narrative among the American people. By Friday, there was another example on that war front, well, at least of the fact that truth can be hard to find. Russia's Black Sea flagship, called the Moskva, sank on Thursday after what was called, by some sources at least, an explosion on board. The Daily Mail did claim that a top admiral had been arrested after the cruiser was, quote, hit by a Ukrainian missile, or maybe even two cruise missiles. And as many as 452 members of the over 500 crewmen on board that ship may have perished in the sinking. But what they really seem interested in focusing on is what they call the broken arrow aspect of the incident. Were there or were there not nuclear-armed missiles on board the cruiser when it was sunk? And they continue to talk about Putin's bungled invasion, saying that this is, quote, a huge propaganda win for Kyiv, as well as another embarrassing loss for Putin's beleaguered army. Russian media, meanwhile, and most of it can't be seen by Americans thanks to Google and YouTube, says a compilation of several sources posted by Hal Turner are furious over the sinking of their Black Sea flagship, the Soviet-era cruiser Moskva, and are openly now either calling for World War III or saying that Russia is already at war with the United States and NATO. But when I looked at all of this, folks, what struck your host was what I guess I'd call the dog that didn't bark, or maybe a lie of omission. Because just about everything else that Russia has done, sometimes before they even did it, has been called a false flag by the American propagandists, who of course say that if you try to use the term false flag, you're a conspiracy theorist. But it's certainly a false flag, of course, if Russia finds bioweapons labs, especially doing gain-of-function research in Ukraine. And now, a Soviet-era cruiser has been sunk, a lot of Russians killed, a lot of other Russians are really, really mad about it, and your host can't help but think Lusitania. Or maybe, well, what did FDR know about Pearl Harbor up front? But speaking of narratives and things Big Brother wants to make war on, we've got another lone gunman in another gun-free killing zone. And amazingly, right on cue. 16 people have been injured, 10 shot in a Brooklyn subway station attack. The day after the Biden-Fuhrer's latest Rose Garden gang rape of the Second Amendment. Yep, another gun-free killing zone, attempted mass murder. And the NYPD has already come out and said, no, it's not terrorism. Makes you wonder just how they know. I guess they're that good. Or maybe it's because they claim later that the shooter actually left his credit card at the scene. How convenient. But right off the bat, they were able to declare authoritatively, the active shooter is no, not a terrorist. Maybe it's because he is a 5'5" tall black male with a heavy build who donned what appeared to be a gas mask, then took a canister out of his bag, opened it, and filled the train car with smoke, whereupon he opened fire, striking multiple people in the gun-free killing zone on the subway and the platform. And kudos next to David Knight, who made a couple of interesting observations later in the week. The alleged gunman managed to shoot 10 people. Evidently, it might have been more, but he was using an extended magazine, booga, 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 and it jammed on him. But it turns out that more people were injured, 13, by the smoke that he deployed than the firearm. And would you believe it, folks? There are thousands of cameras in New York City, about 600 or so in the subway system, it seems, and not a one of them managed to capture video of the event. No wonder NYPD's finest are saying, no, it couldn't be terrorism. But you're not going to get to see it either way. Because not only was the wannabe mass murderer black and identified as such by a number of witnesses, some of whom are expected to survive, he's also a black nationalist who praised what he called the beautiful 9-1-1 attack and has been spouting racist BS for years, like, kill all the whiteys. And you know he's something special because he can get away with that on Facebook and not get banned. And as Zero Hedge's coverage points out, in a city where violence is the new normal, law enforcement, they say, is having to face up to the realization that the suspect, one Frank R. James, had previously set off a whole lot of flags that probably should have warranted, does this sound familiar, a closer look. It started, they note, with Newsweek reporting that the suspect had been investigated and cleared by none other than the infamous FBI. Yes, the fascist bunglers of investigations. And that shouldn't even surprise anybody that's been paying attention. Soon after that report emerged, thousands of people scoured James' socialist media presence to make a number of truly shocking, if, yep, unsurprising discoveries. The suspect, who shot at least 10 people in a terrifying and meticulously planned mass shooting, by the way, police, they say, found explosive devices that didn't detonate, has been publishing bizarre, hate-filled rants on various socialist media, including the oh-so-politically correct YouTube, which will ban Bible believers and constitutionalists, evidently at the drop of a hat, but just seems to love wannabe arsonists and mass murderers. Anyway, his screeds seem to include praising other shooters, and as journalist Andy No reported, citing the line, it's time for action, the alleged wannabe mass murderer has attempted to incite violence on two Facebook for years without them being taken down either. Oh, black Jesus, he said in one of them, please kill all the whiteys.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
These aren't the droids we're looking for. Move along. Move along.
And amazingly, notes Zero Hedge, it took days before the socialist media public-private partners started expunging his material from the web. So yeah, when it really is, you can't call it racism, and evidently you're not allowed to call it terrorism either. Well-known, very left-leaning author Naomi Wolf has a warning on that subject. She warned the Tucker Carlson audience on Monday, and it sounds like she's beginning to figure out what's really going on, has been for quite a while now, to beware of an unfolding emergency in the weeks ahead, because Joe Biden and the leftists are in real deep trouble when it comes to the midterms, even if the election's rigged. They may not be able to rig it enough. So watch for more Fauci lockdown, she says, from the globalist left in the weeks ahead. Here's the quote. 2020, she said, was a story. It launched a narrative. The narrative is you can restrain billions of people, lock them in their homes, inject them against their will, mask them against their will, destroy their economies, suppress their human rights. But if the narrative said COVID, that was the plausible deniability that you weren't an outright fascist tyrant. And you're right to worry about the midterms. Given the history of totalitarianism, she continued, there's no reason to believe the midterms that will deliver a resounding defeat to the Biden regime, and yeah, I changed one word there, are going to be allowed to unfold without some kind of an emergency. And she said if that emergency keeps us all at home, all the better. I guess she won't come right out and say it, so I will, again. I think that means a false flag. And we're seeing all kinds of candidates just today alone. And just when some Americans thought that the pandemic was over and the Fauci-meister might be gone from the scene for good, well, he's been talking it up over the weekend. Oh, yes, that guy is not done yet, folks. Those who understand history realize there's a whole lot more people still to kill. But I'm going to kick off this two-story segment with a piece from the Daily Mail, which says that less than 1 in 10 Americans describe the current state of the COVID-1984 pandemic as a serious crisis. Uh-oh, you know they got to do something about that. This, according to a recent Axios poll published Tuesday, which found that about 3 in 4 respondents said it was a manageable problem. 1 in 6 said it really isn't a problem at all. But Democrats are still 5 times as likely to label it something really serious as anybody with half a brain. Did I really say that? Yeah, as Republican respondents. I'm going to skip over the rest of the survey said details here so I can get to this. But the key is people seem to have gotten tired of the COVID-1984 pandemic, and especially the idiotic stuff that they were expected to believe and do as a result. For example, for the first time since the quarter monthly poll has launched, less than half of the respondents, only 44% now, are drinking the Kool-Aid and support the idea of tyrannical local governments requiring face muzzles in all public places. Which takes me to this story, courtesy of Christina Layla and the Gateway Pundit. Here we go. It says, Philadelphia, the city of, something other than brotherly love nowadays, has reimposed their unconstitutional, you peons don't know any better, so we're going to force it right down your throats, yep, indoor mask mandate, beginning April 18th. All students, sick, will be required to wear masks in schools to addle their brains when they return from spring break. And, said the so-called health commissioner, all public places will require masks due to, rising COVID cases. You too can rig the figures if you have a bogus test that produces all kinds of false positives. And guess what, folks? Even the CDC is backed off from claiming that that's a valid test anymore. But according to the Philadelphia Department of Public Health, sick, as reported by the Philadelphia Inquirer, by resuming the idiotic indoor mask mandate, and guess which word your host put in there, city officials claim they hope to stave off another surge that could accompany the current case increase caused by the booga 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 BA2 Omicron subvariant. And you gotta ask, how do they even know that? You have to have gene sequencing and they haven't got it. Well, we'll come back to that story here in just a few minutes because we're still working our way up the lying ladder today. And on that front, I've got one more story that's been building for a long time. Turns out we've known that it was a major whopping lie. As a matter of fact, it was certainly intended to destroy the Constitutional Republic. So far, they've been getting away with it. But facts still have this tendency to come out, generally now in spite of the major news media. From Kara Castronova via the Gateway Pundit, and they claim they've got exclusive video, although pretty soon it's going to be all over the place, showing Capitol Police allowing protesters to enter via a side door. And it's going to be used in court, and that's the really new news, by a dream team of lawyers that would include none other than the infamous Alan Dershowitz, who is set to defend what are called the January Sixers, those people that were willing to put their lives, their fortunes, and their sacred honor on the line to protest back when they thought they still had a First Amendment right, the criminality that has now taken over what once passed for the American constitutional government. New professionally edited video, it begins, has emerged of police officers allowing protesters into the Upper West Terrace doors of the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021. A trusted source exclusively released the video below, and they include the link to the Gateway Pundit. Tightly edited with markers and commentary narration, it is intended to be presented in court to defend two of those charged, Brady Knowlton and Patrick Montgomery, both of whom face felony charges for, get this, obstruction of an official proceeding on January 6th. And this new video will indisputably exonerate both of them, it says, and all of those rallygoers seen entering via the same doors by any reasonable jury or fair judge. And, yeah, I realize that's now a pretty tall order. The video, it says, was originally obtained from the U.S. Department of Just Us after various media organizations joined in a motion to have it released. You know, they wouldn't let it go because they didn't want you to see it. It's largely gone under the radar until finally it was put into context by our source, says the story, who's carefully edited the video so the average viewer can put the pieces together and see what's going on. Said Knowles' famous attorney, Alan Dershowitz, one of the attorneys in the J6 Dream Team, the video is very convincing, very persuasive. invasive. In the very least, the video shows that a reasonable person could believe that he or she was not being stopped or prevented from going in, and at the most, it shows that the police were literally welcoming them in. Said Knowles, I think all Americans should see that videotape. It's going to help in the court of public opinion as well. And there's a whole lot more detail in the story here, folks, but we've got other things we need to talk about too, and this one, hopefully at least, isn't going away. And we've got a lot more on that front when we get back, right after this bottom of the hour break. Welcome back now to the second segment for this evening. I'm your host, Mark Call, and I only briefly touched on this aspect of the big lie this week during the first segment, but now we'll go into some depth where the illegitimate regime in the District of Criminal Swamp continues to bald-facedly undermine and destroy what's left of the Republic. They're not even hiding it anymore. Everything this regime has done is intended to undermine the rule of law or foment outright destruction and now, of course, famine. For example, we've broken the supply chain, we've completely undermined the ability of farmers to plant and fertilize crops. Once we price diesel fuel out of reach, they won't even be able to harvest them, much less transport them to market. What's next? Oh yeah, let's come up with an excuse to kill tens of millions of turkeys and chickens. No eggs, and pretty soon, no meat for them of any kind. Well, unless you count bugs. Oh yeah, and let's not forget Bill Gates intends to be the microshaft of fake meat. And this continues a process we've watched play out over and over again since the communist Chinese puppets stole the election. From mandating vaccines that destroy people's immune systems to poking the Russian bear in the hopes that just maybe they can get Putin to do what the marionette in chief and his puppeteers have been working so hard behind the scenes to do. Destroy America physically from without. But if you intend to destroy America so completely from within too, via famine, disease, and crime, history makes it clear you darn well better disarm those peons first. Then you can tell them to eat cake. Yeah, that'll fix them. And get in line for the trains. So what I really want to focus on, at least first today, is what I'm going to call the treason update. That's a war against the American people on so many fronts, but none of them more important than making sure that the peons are disarmed before you finish destroying their immune systems, along with their businesses, homes, and futures, and then starve them. Well, there's a teleprompter set up in the Rose Garden Monday morning. That means something really nasty is afoot. And the marionette's getting ready to see if he can read his lines without ad-libbing or otherwise screwing things up too badly. And the leftist media's been greasing the skids for this one for weeks, if not years. Here's how the knee-jerk leftists at the WAPO set it up. The Biden administration, yeah, there's a whopper for you, on Monday is set to roll out new, and I'm going to put this word in here probably more than once, unconstitutional regulations. At least they don't try to call them laws, because they certainly aren't. On ghost guns, there's a new made-up word for you. Don't you know it's supposed to sound really scary? Kits that allow buyers, who think they're actually free citizens, to assemble firearms, oh no, without a serial number. What the administration is promoting isn't wholly new, yeah, that's for sure. They've been infringing things for at least about 90 years now. But they released these proposed new anti-constitutional restrictions back in May, last year. But still, and isn't this a shame, folks, the proposal, said the WAPO, had to go through, no, not the process of lawmaking, much less constitutional review, had to go through the federal rulemaking process. That's how we do it nowadays if we're going to infringe the hell out of what was once called the Bill of Rights, with members of the public, still, imagine this, folks, allowed to submit comments. You get to say, please, please, pretty please, oh master, don't do by fiat what I know darn well you're planning on doing anyway, because, hey, we used to have a right to keep and bear arms. And the final version is what the Biden regime is rolling out on Monday. Now, listen to this. The new rule does sound a bit technical, but put simply, and that's the only way our readers ever manage to understand anything, it'll require retailers to run background checks before selling the kits to the wannabe slaves, and they'll be forced to affix a serial number to the firearm's frame or receiver, which, and here they're lying through their damnable teeth, helps authorities trace it if, and really here they mean when, it's used in a crime. The crime, of course, is you're having it. And if you haven't figured it out by now, just wait for that knock. Well, no, it won't actually be a knock. It'll be more like a door being kicked down at 3 a.m. or so. Oh, yeah, and it also requires federally licensed firearms dealers, and there's a key word, we'll come back to that, to retain key records. In other words, they want to know where you live so that they can come and take them until they shut down their business. Previously, they used to actually be allowed to destroy these records that they thought were their business records after having been forced unconstitutionally to keep those registrations for 20 years. All right, enough of the WAPO BS. Let's do a bit more setup here of the main event. I did a couple of propaganda searches today to just kind of help lay this all out. The New York Times, for example, has been pushing the ghost gun booga 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 narrative then for even longer than they were talking about COVID-1984. Here's one dating back to November of 2017. Ghost guns, homemade and untraceable, face growing scrutiny. And oh yeah, we're just getting rolling on that front. Deadly and untraceable, says another headline. Ghost guns are becoming more common in New York. Yeah, the peons aren't allowed to own much else, so this is now a loophole that we've got to close too. And a quick aside here, folks. I'll probably come back and touch on this again at least once or twice too. These idiots don't even understand economics 101. If you make something harder to obtain, what happens is the price goes up, whether it's illegal drugs or guns or, oh yeah, coming real soon to a theater near you, food. And in the case of things that were once called property protected by the Second Amendment, what does that look like? Well, obviously, they get more expensive. That means that people at the low end of the spectrum think welfare moms in inner cities who'd like to have a firearm to defend their children, but figure they probably better be able to feed them first, they can't do both, are the very first to get priced out of the market. Oh yeah, and then they're the first to get raped and robbed. Because don't forget for a second, the bad guys know right off the top who can't shoot back. And if you understand the concept of marginal utility, you know that someone who uses something as a tool of his trade, think a carpenter, or oh yeah, an armed robber, is willing to pay more for something that they use on a daily basis than someone who might or might not use it, only occasionally, if they're the victim of the one who is making a living at it. Funny, isn't it, how Big Brother wants to drive Ma and Pa retail stores out of existence, and they're doing everything they can on that front, all the while making more and more sure that the criminals are doing a landmark business. Now, there's one more group here that's more than willing to pay higher prices, and that would include things like firearms collectors, who hope to see the price go up and then make money later on. They're doing great. And then there's Hollywood types and politicos who love making sure they have something you're not allowed to, especially if they don't even have to pay for it, but you can't afford it. Whether it's Gulfstreams or Bentleys or a legion of bodyguards with full auto, assault weapons. Oh yeah, and there's one more class of people who also is not only the target of this unconstitutional infringement, but willing to pay higher prices because they know pretty soon they're not going to be able to get them at all. And that's people who have been paying attention, the red-pilled, who know where this is headed and realize that they'd better have something, or pretty soon they really are intended to have absolutely nothing. They certainly don't want Big Brother to know where they live or how many of the liberty teeth, as the founders used to refer to things like this, they might have. What they do know, though, is that they're ultimately intended to be lumped in the same category with all the others. Criminals who aren't allowed to keep and bear arms. As you know, folks, your host prefers to cut to the chase. Let's call them what Big Brother intends them to be. Slaves. Because slaves aren't allowed to own property, especially not something that might be used to threaten their masters, their betters. That's why the founders, and they put the Bill of Rights there for this reason, were so insistent that a couple of things be protected unconditionally against infringement. The right to keep and bear arms and, oh yeah, the right to free speech, to talk about it. And if you've been watching, you know that they're both pretty much dead letters at this point. Back then to just a bit more of the setup here, a couple more headlines from the insanely evil New York Times. Ghost gun, says one from just over the weekend. Intended to grease the skids for the Rose Garden mega infringement. What they are? Und weiss, they are an issue now. One of the actions, they say, taken by the Biden Führer to curb gun violence was to crack down on the proliferation of firearms that are assembled from kits and, oh, here it is again, booga, 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 do not have serial numbers. Notice there's nothing in that shall not be infringed thing in the Second Amendment that mentions serial numbers at all. Unless you count the obvious prohibition on requiring them, like shall not be infringed. And from only about a week ago, still. And see, they knew this was coming. They're invisible. They're well-made. They're ghost guns. Be afraid. Be very afraid. And when we outlaw them, you must cheer if you are a good Nazi, because you no doubt remember what our other Führer said. This year will go down in history. For the first time, a civilized nation has full gun registration. They all have serial numbers, and we know where you live. Our streets will be safer, our police more efficient, and the world, even the United States, once a bastion of freedom, will follow our lead into the future. Yeah, that was from the Berlin Daily, April 15th. Almost exactly 87 years ago today. And this headline from the Monday WAPO, I'm going to throw in there because of the irony factor. Now remember, folks, American peons aren't allowed to own guns unless you're a good little slave, you ask permission, and we know where you live and can come and take them when we feel like it, which, you can rest assured, won't be long now, and their borders aren't sacrosanct either. But not so for freedom-loving Ukraine. Ponder the irony of this headline right out of the WAPO. As war enters bloody new phase, Ukraine asks again for more weapons. And you're going to get to pay for them. Isn't that funny? Oh, yeah, and let's not forget, every single one of them is a weapon of war, the kind that you're not allowed to own at all. From full-auto true assault weapons to grenade launchers and Stinger missiles. And let's be honest, folks, I can't help but think that if Zelensky would come right out and say, hey, we've signed a deal with the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, not to mention the neo-Nazis that have been running our own government here, Biden would give them everything they want anyway, probably tens of billions of dollars worth. They might even be willing to ship them all the guns they intend to steal from freedom-loving Americans. So let me say it again. If you're not cynical by now, if you can't see what's so clearly going on, you simply haven't been paying attention. And that brings me to a couple of other stories now that also preceded today's Rose Garden gang rape of the Second Amendment, because your host will suggest, folks, it's vital to understand how the process of steadily infringing the right to keep and bear arms under color of law has been going on for so long now, and how this new attack represents a major shift of focus. And I'll also say this is something I've talked about for decades at this point, so I don't expect to be able to do in a 5-minute summary the kinds of detail that I've done in hour after hour of real deep looks at exactly how it's been done. The concept of public law versus private law, and what's law at all for that matter. How slaves have been trained to trade their birthright for a cup of pottage, or as Franklin put it, essential liberty for a little temporary security. How the commercial nexus fits in here, an unconstitutional fiat currency that really isn't money at all, but does at least subject you to, let's put it this way, another jurisdiction foreign to our constitution and laws. If you've read the Declaration of Independence, you might recognize that phrase. And there's a whole lot more, but it all basically makes the same point. If you agree to be bound by something, well, even the Bible says, well, then you are. Numbers chapter 30 says, basically, if you make a deal, you'd better do it. You shall not break your word. Well, unless you're president of the United States or pretend to be so on TV. You shall do according to all that proceeds out of your mouth. Romans 6 says the same thing, even a bit more bluntly. Don't you know that whom you present yourselves slaves to obey? Well, you are that one's slaves whom you obey. And Big Brother may not care about the Bill of Rights, but he'll certainly hold you to that one. In practice, folks, what that means is if you ask for permission, then Big Brother assumes you have granted him jurisdiction. Why would you be asking for permission if you had a God-given right to do it anyway? See how it works? I've said for years, I'll get down on my knees and beg for permission to protect my family or speak the truth right when I ask his evil permission to worship the one true God. We either have a right to do things, and the point of the Bill of Rights was to protect those rights that came from God himself, or we don't, in which case we're slaves. Slaves need permission to do anything, and they can't own anything either, and whenever Big Brother feels like it, he can change the rules to boot, which the Führer's doing now. Constitution be damned. But how did we get here, other than slowly and gradually, and one lost right at a time? The business connection, the commercial nexus, and yeah, the fiat money connection fits in there too. If you ask for a license to do business, if you ask for permission, well, then whoever gives you that permission makes the rules, and you've already agreed to it. The example I often use has to do with a place of employment. Your employer says, oh, you think you have a right to worship, to freedom of speech, to keep and bear arms? Well, not here, not on my property, not while I'm writing your paycheck. We've got a contract here, whether you know it or not, and it's a condition of employment that you obey my rules when you're under my jurisdiction. Folks, it's called private law, and it doesn't matter if there's a constitution that says you have a right to keep and bear arms, to freedom of assembly, of worship, or any other thing that doesn't apply here in this realm, this private jurisdiction, you know, another jurisdiction foreign to our constitution and laws. This is how they've gotten away with it for centuries. You leave your Bible at home, you leave your guns outside the door, don't even put them in your car and put it on my property, and don't you think you have a right to free speech either while I'm paying the bills. The legal claim boils down to the right to contract. You have a right to contract, and you can give away all of those other God-given rights by contract. And that's exactly how it's been done. You could say by sleight of hand, too, because it's almost the same thing. But the end result is where we are today. And I'll say it again. Both Franklin and the story from Genesis about Esau and Jacob are right. And they're about exactly the same lesson. Esau traded his birthright for a cup of pottage. He didn't seem to value it very much, says the Bible. And Franklin says pretty much the same thing. Those who would trade essential liberty for a little temporary security deserve neither. If slaves, and that's what they are when they agree to the deal, ask for permission from their big brother master, and that's who they're asking permission from, right? To buy a licensed registered firearm from a licensed federal firearms dealer and a licensed business that manufactures it under a federal firearms license to boot. Oh yeah, and just to put the icing on the cake, they pay for it with fiat Federal Reserve notes that aren't even remotely constitutional actual money, much less gold or silver, that are licensed by something foreign to the Constitution and in violation of the Constitution and the Bible. It's not real money, and the Bible calls it an abomination. So, hey, that alone proves which master you're actually serving, doesn't it? Well, who's surprised when Big Brother later says, oh, yeah, we're going to change the rules again. We don't need no stinking law or Congress to do it. You've already agreed to it. And don't even think about bringing up that Constitution thing. It doesn't apply in this system of private law. So with that in mind, let me paraphrase the WAPO's summary of exactly what their Fuhrer is doing to those slaves who have agreed to a system of totally private law foreign to whatever you think the Constitution might have said. And notice, they start right off by not mentioning Congress or anything approaching legislation, just a federal rulemaking process where the slaves get to comment before Big Brother does what he was planning on doing to them anyway. Then the final version comes out, and all they do is put it in the Federal Register. And shazam, I guess you could say it this way, stroke of the pen, law of the land. Kind of cool. Or maybe not. It's really closer to law of the sea, but that's a related and, yeah, here's the pun, much deeper story anyway. Back to the WAPO telling the slaves what they've agreed to, whether they know it or not. What the new rule does is a bit technical, but put simply, why?
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
It will require business licensed retailers to run licensed background checks by Big Brother's agent before selling the kits to the aforementioned agreed slaves and to affix a serial number. Why? Because they can require it, they make the rules, to a firearms, and they define what that means even, frame or receiver, they define that too, which helps authorities trace it when they don't want the slave to have it anymore, i.e. when it's used in a crime. And possession, of course, is exactly such a crime. And let's not kid ourselves. What's really different here? Why is this such a great leap forward in the best Mao Zedong sense? Because they've abandoned the pretext about citizens and even most of the commercial nexus itself. Because now they've added yet another way to try to get those people who don't agree, who know better than to make that deal with the devil and sign the 4337 yellow registration form for the Nazis, the ATF. that says I have to have permission rather than simply being a free citizen or a free person or someone created in the image of God who has rights once protected by the Bill of Rights, not private law that I've agreed to whether I knew it or not. And ultimately, folks, this is a continuation of the same unconstitutional, well, indeed anti-constitutional scam as universal background checks. It goes like this. If a free person owns something, well, they don't have to have permission from any slave master in order to own it. It's just theirs. And they can do what they like with it. They can use it. They can keep it. They can destroy it. They can give it away. They can loan it out. Or they can bequeath it to their heirs. And there is no slave master to tell them that they can't. Oh, and by the way, the Constitution used to pretty much make that clear with words like shall not be infringed. Before that, of course, there were God-given rights to things like life, liberty, and property. But not, of course, if you agree to trade those rights away. Well, here's the rub. Now what the Biden Führer is saying is we no longer care about your agreement. And even if you make it yourself with your own two hands, you still don't own it, you slave. Slowly but surely, and by great leaps now, we're dropping even the ruse that there's anything you peons can own that we can't infringe. Oh yeah, and let's not forget, folks, just in time, too, because once you figure out you're fixing to be starved and you're not going to even have the energy to get in your car and come down to the Capitol building and protest, we want to make darn sure you're disarmed first and that we know exactly where the guns are and where you are so that we can come and get them. And unless you've had the foresight to lay up some ammo long before this, you won't be able to afford to practice with them anyway. In other words, if we can turn your long rifle into not much more than a club, we've accomplished our goal without you being allowed to fire a shot. Aren't we clever? So what the regime did today was build on principles that have been used to gang rape the Constitution for so long, things like changing the definition of what a firearm is. Of course, they called it modernizing the definition. They got around it shall not a long time ago. And they made up this thing called a ghost gun that allows them to target kits that let peons build things they're not supposed to have, whether they make them themselves or not, or even buy from a licensed federal firearms dealer. So one more giant leap for universal background checks, and of course, oh yeah, the mark that is going to go along with it. And you can smell it from here now, can't you? Which brings me to one of the biggest and most controversial stories of the week, courtesy of the Stu Peter Show, later an interview with Mike Adams and others, about whether the biology of snake venom might also have played a role in the Fauci et al. COVID-19 bioweapon development program. The implications seem to be that there was more to the gain-of-function development of the Ukraine-slash-Fauci-slash-Wuhan bioweapon than we've been told. That part, at least, is no surprise. Now, the controversial, to put it mildly, claim from Dr. Brian Artis is that it's also linked to venom from various types of poisonous venomous snakes, including things you've heard of and things you haven't, but maybe the king cobra might ring a bell. The point is, he cites an article that I think is a decent summary of his main conclusion. Like venom coursing through the body, it said quite a while back, researchers have identified various mechanisms that are driving COVID-19 mortality. The key molecular mechanisms are enzymes related to neurotoxins found in venom, like that in rattlesnakes. There's certainly lots of inside baseball talk in here about complicated-sounding enzymes, and we're still waiting for some of the major players with respectable, and I mean respectable, credentials in the COVID-19 treatment field to weigh in on this, too. But the bottom line is, he found his way to this understanding via the recognition of what are called monoclonal antibodies. Remember how the Biden regime decided you peons couldn't be allowed to have that? Turns out that Dr. Rand Paul has asked, now that Nancy Pelosi came down with the booga-booga flu, in spite, of course, of the claims that she's fully vaxxed and even wears her mask, at least when there are cameras around, gee, is she getting monoclonal antibody treatment that you peons aren't allowed to have? I guess it's a fair question. Turns out that there's even more to it than that. The monoclonal antibodies, they have similar neurological and chemical and biological mechanisms to what goes on in anti-venoms for snake bites. And therein lies the real rub. As Dr. Artis goes into great detail to point out, there are a whole lot of similarities here because it really looks like that was part of the gain-of-function research that was key and that has not been reported. Yeah, COVID-19 really is a bite, a snake bite. It's a venom in lots and lots of ways coursing through the body, claims Brian Artis. And not only that, folks, but as you go through all of the details here, it even makes some of the other pieces start to fall into place, like why ivermectin works so well, why certain supplements were not only so effective but so ignored by the so-called health professionals, why NAC works so well and then had to be deep-sixed by Big Brother so you didn't find out about that either, and so many other things that all point in the same direction. Did an understanding of the mechanisms of snake venom play a role in the development of this satanically evil bioweapon? Or did Fauci and crew do it using mRNA and obviously some HIV proteins, maybe some bat guano, but not necessarily snake poison? And whether you believe Dr. Brian Artis's claims or not, and I'll admit the part about putting it in the water strikes me as a bit strange, snake venom is poisonous, but it has to be injected, not digested. Still, though, you don't want to underestimate the level of evil of people involved in this bioweapons development. It's not like we haven't been surprised before. And certainly Artis's claims about how poisonous remdesivir, or as I like to call it nowadays, remdesivinum, the only Fauci-approved treatment just about guaranteed to kill anybody that's put on it for too long, undeniably is, I guess the only thing we know for sure is that this bioweapon is killing a whole lot of people. And that includes part two, folks, the Zyklon B injections. And the approved cures are worse than the original disease ever was. Maybe snake venom just sounds worse. And no doubt about it, the imagery, even the biblical imagery, resonates with people for good reason. But hopefully, by now you've already realized you don't want anything to do with any of this stuff, whether it comes via a hypodermic needle or a fang. Who's lying to you? The safe answer's probably, especially if they're making billions in the process, and mandating it to boot, all of them.